Jesse Kelly, fellow iHeartRadio host, Twitter provocateur, will join us right around 8:35 this morning. Also coming up right around 8:20, we'll start the conversation with our lawyer extraordinaire, Jeff O'Brien. The new Facebook policy actually sanctions violence, calls for violence against people that they believe it's okay to incite acts of violence against, apparently. So we'll get into that. We'll get some thoughts from our lawyer extraordinaire and also Jesse Kelly a little bit later on in the hour. A few more things here, and just a quick point before we move on to this Ilhan Omar story and a couple of other issues. But getting back to the CBO, says the federal minimum wage at $15 an hour would cost 1.3 million jobs. 17 workers would see higher paychecks, but the poorest and least skilled are likely to be left out. This is a similar problem, and it brings up the unspoken problem again that we mentioned a bit yesterday, and it applies to the Ilhan Omar story we're going to share with you in just a moment. Talked about it with Amy Klobuchar and the lack of concern or care that she's out gallivanting around the country with some misguided notion that she actually has the opportunity to get the Democrat 2020 presidential, nominee ticket. Right. Her constituents don't care because all they care about is making sure there's individuals serving in these particular districts and as placeholders for the DFL. Right. How many of those that voted for Ilhan Omar in CD5 actually, pay attention to what she says on the national level or care what policy she's crafting? I'm going to venture a guess that most of them don't. Same thing with Amy Klobuchar. They don't really care what she's doing as long as she's there as a placeholder and their side is in a position of power. The same thing can be said when it comes to this minimum wage issue. Many of the loudest voices for the left don't care about consequences. They only care about the victories. It's all that matters. It doesn't matter that, millions of people are going to go lose their jobs. It doesn't matter, as Reason rightly points out, that the poorest and least skilled are likely to be left out. It doesn't matter as long as they're able to push their policy, bring more people to vote for Democrats, and have a victory. This is a bad analogy, but I'm going to use it anyways. I watched, as I do every 4th of July, I watched Independence Day. Have you seen Independence Day?
I think so.
Okay. So I watched Independence Day, and There's a moment in the middle of the film, right, after the aliens come and invade.
Okay, I have seen it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So they've got all their big, gigantic, disc-shaped, multi-mile-wide ships that are over all these major metropolitan areas,
okay.
Right?
Okay. Yep.
So they decide that they're going to try to nuke them. Okay? And they decide they're going to nuke a ship over Houston. Okay? And there's some protesting to that, you can't do that. The Jeff Goldblum character's like, what are you doing? You can't launch, nuclear weapons over American soil. But in the movie, right, the nuking of the ship would have been worth it, would have been worth the cost to humanity and turning Houston into a U.S. version of Chernobyl in order to rid the planet of aliens, right?
Yeah.
Right. The getting rid of the aliens was worth the cost of turning, pockets of America into our own little Chernobyl. Okay. The victory was worth the cost. When it comes to this minimum wage argument, the difference is wages are not in a dire situation. The Democrats want to go and say that they are. They want to act like, and they want to put out there a narrative that says that all these people are suffering. And so therefore, if you go and push back and say, but what about all these jobs that are going to be lost? If they don't ignore it, they'll go with the other part of it. Well, it's worth the cost. Those individuals will find jobs. Well, what about the fact that those individuals are the poorest and least skilled and they're likely to be left out? The very individuals that you've been saying that you're doing this to help all along. No, I don't care. Just vote for Democrats. No. They just stick their fingers in their ears, right? The devastation that this would cause is worth it for them for what? To have a victory. They feel morally justified in doing so. And they're hoping and they're banking on the stupidity of the average voter, which I get, especially on the left, is going to work for them, which is why Bernie Sanders thinks putting out ads like this.
Bernie Sanders just changed the game again, this time with a new student debt cancellation plan that cancels all student debt. That's right, you heard me, all of it. If you refinance your debt, it's canceled. If your parents took out loans on your behalf, they're canceled. Are you yourself a parent with loans? Canceled. Are you on a low-income repayment plan? Your debt is canceled.
The arrogance of that ad is astonishing. It really is astonishing.
It's so frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah, and shame on the person who listens to that and goes, yeah, totally, cancel it.
Yeah,
there's no negative ramifications of that. Sure, what about the lender? Pfft, whatever.
What? It's fine.
You made the choice, though. Take that. Pfft, yeah, but I only did it because I had to go to college and I had to get a degree. So yeah, and what did that do for you? Did you get a degree? Yeah. What are you doing now? Nothing.
And that's the thing. You are investing in your future, and it's your responsibility to take the degree that you decided to spend a bunch of money on. Or, if you dropped out of school, that's your responsibility. You still got to pay for it. But if you got that degree and if you took out those loans for that degree, you were investing in your future, and your collateral is your future and making that money so that you can pay it off.
Right. Right. There's no personal responsibility.
There's zero personal responsibility. They're like, this is like a scary number, and that's a lot of money, so could we just, cancel it?
We'll just get rid of it. We won't talk about any of the unintended consequences. We won't talk about the fact that we're not really canceling it. We're just making other people pay for it for you.
And how about the people who have spent an entire lifetime paying off the student loan debt that they had and, finally paid it off, and then they hear all these people that are just complaining about and wanting to cancel their debt?
Right.
People work really hard to pay off that debt that they chose to take on. And for some people, it's a really good investment. For some people, they go into really, really good careers and it's completely worth it and they pay off their debt. But if you're not taking that personal responsibility to make the choices that allow you to pay it off, then maybe you shouldn't take on that debt. Maybe take a gap year and figure out what you want to do with your life before you take out a bunch of money that you're not going to be able to pay back.
And those candidates that are out there offering all this free stuff, right? Changing the land of the free and home of the brave to land where everything's free and home of the kind of brave by taking other people's money. They just assume that the individuals that don't like those ideas aren't going to vote for them anyhow. Yeah. And they can get enough voters out there who do believe they'll benefit from them to go in and sweep them into office.
Well, and the frustrating thing is all you hear about is just, let's cancel the debt, let's cancel the debt. And it's what really should be a conversation is, let's talk about all the different whoever is giving out these loans, let's talk about them giving out loans to 18-year-olds who are not going to be responsible enough to pay them back, but they know that.
Yep.
And let's have the conversation about them, but that doesn't have as catchy of a ring as elect me and I'll give you free stuff and I'll give you free money.
Along the same lines, because that ad's not truthful, this idea of canceling, it's not truthful. Neither is apparently Representative Ilhan Omar, but it doesn't matter. Right? Because Representative Ilhan Omar, in my opinion, does not care about the truth. Okay? She's forever a victim, and therefore, because of that, she feels morally justified to say whatever is necessary to achieve whatever her attempts are or whatever she's trying to accomplish. And the case in point comes from this article from the Washington Examiner. Representative Ilhan Omar confessed to falsifying a story she shared in front of about 400 students at Richfield High School in Minneapolis. The anecdote was from Omar's days of working for a Minneapolis city councilman 5 years ago. By the way, you say it enough, Sam, it just becomes automatic. When you just say council enough, it just kind of rolls right off the tongue. She described doing that thing with my fingers, a sweet old African-American lady who got arrested for stealing a $2 loaf of bread to feed her starving 5-year-old granddaughter and spent the weekend in jail. Omar said that she attended the courtroom when the woman was brought in and she yelled BS, but not BS, the full phrase that I cannot say on the radio. When the woman was fined $80 that she couldn't pay, Omar yelled bleh. Okay. After the congresswoman's speech, which, again, she was 30 minutes late for and cost the students their lunch period, the Washington Post investigated the claim. I'm not sure. The details might not all have matched, but that's what I remember, said the Minnesota Democrat in an interview. She might have had a prior arrest. City officials debunked the arrest, going on to say that law enforcement isn't allowed to arrest shoplifters unless it's violent or there's likely a further crime. The typical punishment for shoplifting is a 3-hour class. And yet Ilhan Omar fabricated the story of a sweet old African-American lady who, she said, got arrested for stealing a $2 loaf of bread to feed her 5-year-old granddaughter, when in reality, no, she was not arrested. And even if she was busted and the story was true, she wouldn't have been, based off of the city of Minneapolis' own arrest standards for shoplifting. Typical punishment for shoplifting is a 3-hour class. She went on to say this: "I grew up in an extremely unjust society," said the former Somali resident in her speech. "And the only thing that made my family excited about coming to the United States was that the United States was supposed to be the country that granted justice for all. So I feel it necessary for me to speak about that promise that's not kept." The Washington Post denounced her story, saying it echoed the plot of Les Miserables. But she doesn't care.
No, she doesn't at all.
She doesn't care. She will say whatever she wants to say. Doesn't have to be truthful or not to achieve whatever she's attempting to accomplish. She'll say it in regards to her citizenship, right? She'll say anything when it means getting elected. She'll say anything when it means to pursuing agendas. She's shown no desire to be honest whatsoever, and she feels morally justified in doing so. These are the actions of, like, the most compelling, dangerous villains from the stories that we all love. The most compelling villains are the ones that feel like what they're doing is right. The ones that feel like they're justified in what they're doing. The ones that you see in the comic books and in movies. This is how true villains act. And she is a representative. And the sad part is, again, I'm of the opinion that the majority of people that vote for her and put her in office, they don't care. All they care is making sure that there's a person that has a DFL next to their name. And they just don't even pay attention to any of this. 651-989-5855. This is just, it's infuriating. And this will get nothing. This will get nothing. If it does, then I'll say, hey, I was wrong. But this will get nothing in terms of coverage in the local media. I mean, she made high school students wait for a half hour. They totally lost their lunchtime to hear a fabricated story from Representative Ilhan Omar. It's astonishing. And she's the victim, right?
Always the victim.
All right, let's lighten things up for just a moment.
Yay. Mm-hmm.
St. Louis Park and their city council isn't the only one causing controversy locally.
I like this controversy a lot more.
Yeah, this is a lot more palatable.
Yes.
Farm animals as pets could soon be allowed throughout Brooklyn Park, even in neighborhoods. This week, the city wrapped up a survey about the ordinance change that is being considered. So the conversation started last August, so a year ago, when Rebecca Buckley asked the city for permission to keep her pot-bellied pig, Peco. Did you say Pico or Peco?
Let's say
Peco?
Peco.
We'll go Peco. It's P-E-C-O. Peco. "He's just been an awesome animal to have," she said. "He's just so different from any other animal because of his intelligence." Now, Sam, you can speak to some authority on this, can't you?
I can. I own a potbelly pig. His full name is Pig Newton, like Fig Newtons.
It's amazing.
But we just call him Piggy for short. And he is wonderful. He got a little bit bigger than we expected. We thought that he was going to stay smaller. Apparently, there's not always, I don't know, not mini pig. If they say it's a mini pig, they're not always going to be like mini potbelly pigs. They get kind of big. So he's kind of a big boy, but he's super cute. He's super friendly. His favorite food is oranges, and when we got him, he was litter box trained, and
wow.
Yeah, we taught him how to sit on command, and then we also taught him how to, like, do the little beg thing where he sits up on his back legs, but he's a little bit too fat to do those tricks now, but really, really wonderful pets. Really, really love him. He's super friendly and fun to have around.
So Rebecca said as Peco has grown, he's moved outside where he has a shed to sleep in. Buckley said, "We have the same rules as any other animal you have in your residential area. In Brooklyn Park, however, pigs and other farm animals are only allowed on properties with more than 5 acres. If you're respecting your neighbors, I don't see what the problem is," said Buckley. So the city council heard her out and decided to consider an ordinance change. It would allow pigs, chickens, and goats on smaller properties. The only thing the story doesn't cover here, and we'll get to some more details, and the question that I had with it was, There was an ordinance in place already. Why was that ordinance in place in the first place? And what has changed that would warrant the removal of the ordinance from what it was originally crafted?
Yeah, I can't. I mean, I can't speak with a ton of authority on Brooklyn Park's ordinances, but you see a lot of ordinances for any city. They vary city by city. I think 5 acres is a very typical like minimum for having livestock on your property, such as horses, pigs, goats, anything like that. Especially horses are pretty restricted, especially when you get into areas like Brooklyn Park. So not a big surprise there, but I can't speak specifically on Brooklyn Park's policies.
Looking at adjacent cities, it's very common, said Michelle Peterson, the city's neighborhood health supervisor. We get a lot of calls each year about other animals as pets. Pets now are not your traditional cats and dogs. She said she received about 1,500 responses to the survey, plus feedback from several meetings. The responses were good. According to Peterson, the biggest concern they've had so far is animal noise. Does your pot-bellied pig, does he make a lot of noise?
He only makes noise if he's in some kind of pain or you're like doing something to really irritate him. The only
so
time...
So when you're chastising him then? He cries out in pain.
He doesn't cry out in pain, but he like grunts very, very angrily when he gets yelled at. But the only time I've ever heard him get super loud is he grows like little tusks and we trim them once a year. Whenever we trim those, he squeals really, really loud. But other than that, I mean, you look at the noise that like chickens make. Roosters are really loud, and I think that later on in the story it points out that roosters would likely not be permitted.
Right.
That makes sense. They're really annoying. They're super loud. Don't get a rooster. Hens are fine, though. They don't really make that much noise. Pigs are generally quiet unless you're like really irritating them. And goats are going to kind of really be just as loud as like a dog would be. You think about like how much noise a dog generally makes when it barks. Mm-hmm. Some goats are quieter than others, just like some dogs are quieter than others. And there's some breeds that are known for just being like those goats. And you see videos of goats screaming like people. We have one of those types of goats that just screams like a person. But our other goats are generally more quiet and they'd be totally fine.
Peterson said the city is considering 1 pot-bellied pig per household, 2 goats per household. Well, you're out.
I know.
How many do you have? You're like 80, right?
We have 4.
Four, okay. 4 chickens per household. How many chickens do you have? You're on a farm. No, it's different.
Yeah, I can't even speak to that. A few dozen.
I know, you were talking about moving to Brooklyn Park recently. So
well, we had a bunch of chickens hatch out little chicks. So we have like 4 hens that have chicks. So I don't even know. We have a lot of chickens right now.
Not everyone is on the Brooklyn Park page or Facebook page for that matter. So I think maybe door knocking and finding different ways to get everyone's attention. So everyone's opinion is heard, said another resident, right? Mm-hmm. City leaders are asking for more input. Peterson said people can contact her directly. Buckley is hopeful the ordinance will come to fruition. Apparently, I think I was in the story here, and she registered it as a support animal, didn't she? I thought.
I think so.
Peco was certified as a therapy pet, which makes sense because they look big and huggable.
I wonder, can
you hug your pot-bellied pig, or does he get angry? Does he moan out in pain?
No. If you hug him, he's like...
Would he enjoy that?
Yeah.
You know?
He understands the difference between getting yelled at and getting love.
I wonder about that with Bella, my dog, because I give her hugs all the time, and I'm just like, I'll be hugging her going, do you like this? Okay, there's no way. She doesn't run away.
I think, yeah, if they didn't like it, they'd run away or make it very clear that they don't like it.
So I was curious about that.
There was one aspect in this story that I thought was a little ridiculous. Like, one person that was concerned about the animals pointed out that not only were they worried about noise, but also animals wandering off onto neighboring properties. Put up a fence? Require fences if you're going to have goats? Duh.
Yeah, I could see that from the... There are so many residences that have those big backyards, but there is no fencing. Like in my neighborhood where I'm at in Blaine, most of the houses around me all are fenced in. But you know, you've been through those neighborhoods where there's all those, you know, all those neighborhoods that are built, and unless they put in a backyard, those backyards are just all connected.
I really think though, if you're going to be one of those like houses in a little neighborhood in Brooklyn Park, and you're like, I really need some goats. I want goats, and I want to be a part of this. I think that requiring those people to invest in a fence is kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah, that's pretty easy.
Our goat's free range, but we have 75 acres.
So, look, there's 2 reasons we brought this up. One is an interesting story, and we both want to talk about it. But the other part is, this is how things are supposed to be done when it comes to city council leadership. Right?
Yes.
So St. Louis Park City Council leadership, Ann Mavity and the rest of you idiots.
You fools.
Yeah. Look, This is what happens. Somebody comes and brings you a complaint. Then you go and have a discussion. Then you ask for the community's input. And then you go from there. You don't do what you guys did, which was step in it, by just willy-nilly deciding that you were going to go ahead and get rid of the Pledge of Allegiance. That's how not to go and handle issues. Mm-hmm. So, you know, apparently, the people in Brooklyn Park on the good side of things are more woke in that regard.
Yes.
Than in the good attempts way. To be woke by mm-hmm. the St. Louis Park City Council.
Yes.
All right, coming up. Facebook sanctions violent threats against dangerous individuals. We're going to talk with our lawyer extraordinaire, Jeff O'Brien. I'm, you know, obviously curious about the legality of this. It's a private company, you know, on a social networking platform. It's basically saying that those that use the platform can post threats of violence, right? Intent to commit high severity violence on a predetermined list of individuals that they believe basically deserve it. We'll get his thoughts next and talk with Jesse Kelly.
FM.
On tomorrow's show, there's a really good, we didn't get a chance to get to it today, there's a really good counterpoint to the editorial that was put out. I think it was before we went on vacation. Might have been while we were on vacation. When it comes to the St. Paul trash collection, somebody tried to argue in favor of the city. And there's a great counterpoint piece today in the Star Tribune pushing back on all that buffoonery. So hopefully on tomorrow's show, when Drew is back on Justice and Drew, we have the opportunity to cover that. Also, Katie Pavlich should be joining us coming up in about 15 minutes from now. Jesse Kelly will be on. Right now, we are very pleased to welcome to the show. We put out the signal and lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien. Brian was happy to answer the call. Good morning, sir. How are we doing this morning?
Good morning. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
So we'll use the story out of Breitbart. There's one here from Washington Examiner. Some people noticed this, and it caught some attention, rightfully so. Facebook recently updated its policy on violence and incitement, and it states that death threats and incitement to violence are banned across the platform unless your threat is aimed at someone the social network has labeled as an acceptable target. Threats that could lead to death and other forms of high severity violence of any targets were where threat is defined as any of the following. And then they list through calls for high severity violence, content where no target is specific but a symbol represents the target, statements advocating for a high severity of violence, aspirational or conditional statements to commit high severity violence. And these are all coupled with this, unless the target is an organization or individual covered in the dangerous individuals or organizations policy. I'm just going to kind of hand it to you, Jeff. What is your reaction to this? And is there a legal precedent either way for what they're doing?
I don't know of a legal precedent for what they're doing. I was surprised to see this, and I had not heard of this until you sent me the story, and I read the story, and I clicked through something like this. There has to be more to this, and so I went to the Facebook community standards and saw the language you just quoted. I'm like, no, that's it's there. And my first thought was, you know, maybe this was some, you know, intern that was on his way out and decided to put something in the community standards like this. I don't know. But this is a little bit, I mean, this is bizarre. This is just disturbing that, you know, for what I do in my practice, you know, a lot of what I do is advising clients how to avoid liability. And if I'm the lawyer for a big social media company who's already had scrutiny from, you know, Congress for various business practices and things that go on the platform, and they come to me and say we're going to put this into our community standards, we're going to allow, you know, threats of violence against people, and I would be advising them not to do that. I mean, we've seen cases in the past. The part that bothers me about it is the part that says, you know, the clause about where in criminal or predator status has been established by media reports, market knowledge of news event, etc. So we aren't even talking about making threats against somebody who has been convicted of something. This is the, you know, if if there are media reports that that somehow establish the person's culpability, which we've seen time and again, people falsely accused in the media of different stuff. Remember the Duke lacrosse case, the Gopher football team a few years ago, where it was ultimately found out that a lot of these folks that were accused were, you know, didn't do anything. And now we're going to amplify that. Not only are you given, you know, you can defame somebody online, but now Facebook is going to allow people to, you know, put out calls for vigilante justice against people who may or may not actually have done something wrong. This is a dangerous precedent, and if it stays, I'm guessing we're going to see down the road some sort of a court case. If something happens, I hope nothing happens. But if somebody, you know, uses Facebook to, you know, basically put a, you know, virtual hit out on somebody, and someone carries it out, you know, we're going to see a court case as to Facebook's liability in providing the platform to do it.
Yeah, I mean, how many different ways can we tackle this? I mean, look at the subjective nature of what it is they're doing. So Facebook's, you know, sort of process here is they have their own predetermined list of individuals that are open to threats of violence, right? Okay, so let's say, again, if somebody goes and does that and then acts upon it, as you said, against somebody that happens to be on Facebook's list, but also has done no crime, you know, where's the liability there? Or is that where this is coming from? Is Facebook trying to not be liable by saying they're going to allow this so that they're not held to that kind of standard? Does that track at all?
No, because I mean, if it was a zero tolerance period, end of story, no threats of physical violence or harm to anyone, period, that's it. They're in a better position if somebody goes and puts something up on Facebook, you know, some call for violence. But to create an exception that would allow somebody to do it, if somebody exploits that and something does happen, theoretically, they could be held liable. And, you know, you're talking about a publicly traded company with very deep pockets. If I'm the lawyer for Facebook, I tell them, get rid of this, like, today. Like yesterday. I mean, you don't put this, you don't have any sort of exception. There's no exception to this.
Yeah, and are we going to reach a point where let's say you threaten an act of violence against a group that's not on Facebook's list? Are you going to be allowed to then petition and try to give them all the reasons why that individual hurt your feelings to the point where you feel like it's justified for you to go and threaten them with an act of violence? I just don't see how. I really hope it gains the amount of attention it deserves to have, because this is not where we should be going as a society. We have a set of societal rules right now when it comes to this type of behavior and threats that works pretty well. We're not allowed to do that on the air. We get fired. We can't just make up an arbitrary list of individuals that we deem it's okay because of the horrendous things that they may have actually done. There's no justification for us to go and then say, hey, you can go ahead and we'll threaten acts of violence against that person because we know for a fact they've been convicted of pedophilia. You can't do that.
That's exactly right, John. You know, we have a system of laws in this country and in this state where we have a criminal code. We have degrees of crimes and penalties for those crimes. We have a court system that adjudicates whether or not somebody is guilty of one of those crimes. That's the forum where justice is carried out, not on the pages of Facebook. And, you know, this further undermines Facebook's credibility as a social media platform. You know, they're already editing, you know, some of the content, you know, kind of discriminating amongst viewpoints and philosophies, particularly political philosophies on Facebook. Now we're going further and saying, if, you know, there are certain categories of individuals, it's okay to incite violence against. It's starting to become more like an echo chamber over there.
Yeah, it's I'm going to be very interested to see how much more attention it ends up receiving. I did, while we were talking, just because it's easy to do, I did a quick Google check over the past 24 hours, because this was actually discovered by just a user posted it on Twitter, oddly enough, and then it started gaining momentum and some media outlets picked up on it. And so far, there hasn't been, it hasn't really gained a ton of momentum yet. And I also wanted to make sure that what we were seeing was correct, because as you pointed out, I think like most people did, you know, a lot of times the internet lies to us, Jeff O'Brien. I don't know if you realize that or not. It probably lies to us more often than we like. But yeah, I went to Facebook too, and it's sitting right there, and it hasn't been removed yet. So it'll be very interesting to see what kind of coverage it ends up getting, and just kind of what kind of commentary ends up surrounding it. I'm curious to see what individuals try to step up and defend this type of policy, because in most circumstances, again, especially in public forums, it just wouldn't fly.
Right, that's exactly right, John. And I hope that this does get some more coverage. Because the sooner the wider the coverage it gets, the sooner Facebook will delete that exception to the policy, and it should be deleted. There should not, that platform should not be used. And then, you know, some of the folks that are described, yeah, they're some of the most disgusting, vile individuals on the planet. But there is a system of laws and a system of courts that handle that dispense justice to those individuals, and Facebook is not judge, jury, and executioner, and they shouldn't be involved with this. So I hope they change the policy and delete this exception.
Jeff O'Brien, as always, man, thanks for coming on short notice. It was great talking with you, buddy. Appreciate it.
That's good. Thank you.
So it's interesting because the two different stories that we have here, the one comes from the Washington Examiner, and what the Washington Examiner zeroed in on was the sex offender aspect of it. Okay, and we'll give you both points of it, and then we're going to be talking with Jesse Kelly coming up here in just a moment. It's do not post section on the website. Facebook changed its standards in July, right, to update to allow the exception to its violence and incitement standard for individuals describing as having carried out violent crimes or sexual offenses wherein criminal/predator status has been established by media reports, market knowledge of a news event, etc. So, case in point, you could have somebody who was convicted as a sexual predator, okay? And again, I'm just going to throw out sort of a tame scenario, right, where we've seen this like in movies and other times when this type of conversation comes up. But say somebody gets busted relieving themselves and therefore exposing themselves outside of a bar or restaurant. Law enforcement comes across them. They're exposing themselves because of what the action that they're doing at the time. They get arrested, they get charged, and it ends up that they end up getting this sort of sexual predator status attached to them because of the nature of what they did.
Yes.
Even though it doesn't necessarily lend itself to what most of us consider sort of a sexual predator.
Like that character from Horrible Bosses.
There you go. Right?
Okay, yes.
So that person, right, they've gone through the system, they've served whatever time and paid whatever fine they needed to do, but they have the sexual predator tag attached to them. Somebody happens to know about this. That person is on Facebook, and people go and say that's a sexual predator, and they call for acts of violence against that individual. By Facebook standards, that would be deemed okay. The exception allows users to make threats that could lead to death against alleged violent or sexual offenders. Facebook does not require for the threats to be against persons who have been convicted under criminal law. Facebook did not return the Washington Examiner's request for comment in time of the publication. In May, the company said, "We've always banned individuals or organizations that promote or engage in violence, hate, regardless of ideology." Now, Breitbart took it a step further, and they actually grabbed their list of dangerous individuals, and we'll share who is on that list and talk a bit about Jesse Kelly about whether or not we assume that it applies to the individuals on this list as well. And, you know, Jesse Kelly's got some experience in this because he's been booted off of Twitter before because of some things that he said in the past as well. So really curious to get his thoughts, and we'll do that next.
Radio station.
Twin Cities News Talk, Justice and Drew. Drew will be back on tomorrow's show. Looking forward to having him back in studio. Also, Katie Pavlich joining us on tomorrow's show as well. Let's not waste any more time, though.
Watch out!
Jesse!
I've got it all, and I'm getting more, but I never thought we'd be tomorrow.
Twitter provocateur, Jesse Kelly. Good morning, sir. How we doing? Hello?
He was there.
Jesse Kelly.
Never been better, John.
There we go.
There you are.
I've never been better. You should see me right now.
I have a picture of you. Actually, I made you my my laptop screensaver. So I'm actually looking at your handsome so mug right funny. Now.
I have the same thing in my heart.
All right, let's dive right into this, and I'll mention yesterday, because it'll be relevant to our conversation. We had our counterterrorism experts and CEO of Allens Global, David Gartensteiner-Ross, on the show, and if anybody missed it, you can go on the iHeartRadio app, where you can also listen to Jesse Kelly's show, and check out the 7 o'clock hour from yesterday's show. Well, we talked at length about Facebook. And especially their booting off of individuals from the platform. And David had mentioned how there wasn't a ton of concern, or doesn't seem to be as much concern, about booting people from the platform. And I made the thought, Jesse, that, or the comment, that I wonder if that has to do with sort of Facebook's waning popularity in the United States with some of these conservative individuals. What, and this will tie into what we're going to talk about, what David Gartenstein-Ross was quick to point out was how popular Facebook is outside the U.S. and around the world, and how their influence is not just here in the United States, but we have to think of it on a global level because they are massively popular in other countries as well. This will lead into this story that we've been talking about this morning, Facebook sanctioning violent threats against dangerous individuals. What are your thoughts on this policy that was found by just a random Facebook user and is now garnering some attention, although not a lot, from the mainstream media?
Well, it's par for the course in that they think they can control dialogue, and that's what makes it so dangerous, John. The main argument conservatives, well, the smart argument conservatives have been having, people on the right have been having about Facebook and Twitter and the rest of them, is that they are not, as they proclaim to be, a platform. There are different liability statuses if you're a platform or if you're a publisher. You know, New York Times knows they're a publisher. They choose what they publish. They choose what they don't publish. Facebook and Twitter and other social media sites, they enjoy the freedoms that come with saying, hey, we're just a platform. I have no control over what's on my site, so don't sue me. But then they're constantly doing things like this and issuing commands about what you can and cannot say. So they want their cake and they eat it too, and that's why they live in deathly fear of somebody changing their tax status and making them publishers, because then they're going to get sued.
And again, Facebook is sanctioning violent threats against dangerous individuals, calls for high-severity violence, unless the target is an organization or individual covered in the dangerous individual organization's policy. And then it goes through the list. You know, you can't target a specific symbol, but statements advocating for high severity of violence are okay if that target or organization is an individual covered in their dangerous individual's organization policy. Same thing with aspirational or conditional statements to commit high severity violence, unless, you know, it's on their own personal hate hit list, essentially, which includes, according to the story here, you have Candace Owens, right? You have the author and think tank founder Bridget Gabriel. You also have individuals more well known, Candace Owens is, but, you know, InfoWars host Alec Jones, populist pundit Paul Joseph Watson, conservative activist Laura Loomer, Louis Farrakhan, Milo Yiannopoulos. These are individuals on the list that could potentially be, by Facebook, sanctioned to have calls of violence be put out against them publicly.
We know how this ends, John. That's the thing. Today it's Alec Jones, tomorrow it's you.
Yeah.
You know, tomorrow it's me. And that is the danger of it. In every single argument, be it on social media or culturally or otherwise, that people on the right have warned about the quote slippery slope has come to fruition. Every single time something dangerous it starts to poke its head up, or the left starts to gain a little ground on something, people on the right scream about this is a slippery slope. You watch what's going to happen. Something dangerous is going to happen from this. Every single time the people on the right are right, if you'll pardon the pun. And this is coming soon. Sooner or later, John Justice is going to be deemed dangerous. And of course you can issue death threats to him. He's dangerous. He's one of those Nazis.
Well, and of course, This is something we've also seen lately, right, in some other controversies that have been swirling around, and certainly like around the situation with Epstein. We don't have to go into that right now, but this sort of retroactiveness. You've also seen it with Mitch McConnell when it comes to, you know, reparations and people in his past that may have been slave owners. And this is, you know, this idea that we're going to retroactively look at these individuals from a long time ago and people that are distant relatives, and we're going to hold them accountable now. So you're right. If this, and this is the fear that I have, is that if this type of narrative continues to be promoted and is ultimately accepted, then it's open season. It's like the example, and then I'll stop and shut up and let you talk. But it's like the example that I always give: if the activist groups ever get their way in changing the name of the Washington Redskins, right? That to me was always a big domino to fall. That if that domino, if that one ever gets changed, then there's going to be a whole slew of offensive names that'll be alleged offensive names of different outlets that'll be changed in the wake of that. If this is allowed to go through and is accepted, it's open season on conservatives. It already
is. It is, but we're already there. As you know, we're already there. And look, what they're doing is, and it's painfully obvious to anyone paying attention, they're shooting a target and then painting a bullseye around it afterwards. It has nothing to do with the actual conduct. It has to do with who they're going after. So if you're going after Mitch McConnell and you don't have anything strong against him, and you know, I'm sure the timing of this is totally coincidental, that he's about to have an opponent declare, a Democrat opponent right. declare against him, and you don't have anything solid on him, well, let's check out his dad. Well, nothing there. Let's check out his grandpa. Nothing. And sooner or later, you have to go down the line and find out his great-great-grandfather 150 years ago owned slaves. And if that's all you've got, then that's what you run with. It has nothing to do with the sin. It's all about the sinner.
Well, and it's a further extension of this idea that started, you know, last year, year before with the, hey, don't be mean to people unless they're a Nazi. You got to punch a Nazi. If you see a Nazi, yeah. you got to go and punch him. That's a universal.
Yeah, and that's why they use that language, John. It's why we've been warning about how dangerous this is for a long time. Of Nazi this and Nazi that, and concentration camps, and he's a Nazi, and even if he's not a Nazi, he's a Nazi sympathizer. And once you've decided somebody is a Nazi, you've allowed your conscience to do whatever you want to him, because, well, if he's a Nazi, what can you do to a Nazi?
Well, and here's the dangerous thing beyond just here in America that I was going to bring up. I reached out to David Gartenstein-Ross, we had on the show yesterday, because we had this lengthy discussion prior to having the story in our hands. And I shot him the story, as I did you this morning, said, love to get your thoughts. This is what he wrote back. He goes, yep, that's what it says. The language is stupid, dangerous, possibly illegal, and will almost certainly change in the coming months. So if that's the case, let's say for the sake of argument, there's pushback on this. You know, what was Facebook's not stupid. Zuckerberg and the people that run it aren't dumb. They're going to have to know there's going to be pushback on this. So what's the point? That's the part of it.
I think here's what we do. We imagine Zuckerberg or what's his name, Jack Dorsey, the head of Twitter, or these guys. We imagine them to be these super genius, evil puppet masters who are up there pulling the strings and controlling everything that goes on.
Or just rational. Just rational.
Yes. That's not always the case.
Sure.
These guys now run these huge companies, absolutely enormous companies, that have them packed full of Silicon Valley leftists, intentionally or otherwise. And so Zuckerberg may not have even been aware of this rule until the controversy came out. He's got a million different people underneath him putting in this rule, putting in that rule. And that's the problem when you're a CEO and you have a company packed full of leftists. Eventually, at some point in time, you're going to look around and they're going to hurt you, and they're going to hurt you bad. And not that I'm defending Zuckerberg by any stretch of the imagination.
Sure.
I just think sometimes we think that there's one evil puppet master at the top, when lots of times it's not one big evil one, it's 100 smaller evil ones.
Is this really just a matter, I mean, is it really just as simple, maybe not in every case, but we have this, we certainly, I'm sure you've seen the story of the St. Louis Park City Council here, where the station's located at here in Minneapolis. They're voting against the Pledge of Allegiance and all the controversy that's been stirred up because of that. Is it really just as simple as these individuals are in this bubble? They don't go out of that bubble. And because they're in that bubble, they just got a lot of like-minded parrots around them. And they think it's a good idea and they roll with it, not realizing, not being smart enough or rational enough to know that once you do this, people are going to be pretty ticked off.
Oh, yes. And think how easy it is to be in that bubble anymore, John. Let's say you've got parents who either aren't that involved or the Democrats. They send you to a government school at the age of 5 or 6 where you go for 7 hours a day. You then move from there right on to a commie training camp known as a university system. You move right from there into a Silicon Valley job surrounded by leftists. You live, work, and worship with leftists. Soon you're 30 years old and you don't have any idea that anyone else in the world thinks differently than you. You've never been around it.
Yeah. This is a... It's a very dangerous precedent that's being sent here. There's an article that we haven't had a chance to get to. You might be able to get to on tomorrow's show. Stephanie Wilkinson, she was the co-owner of that Red Hen in Lexington when she asked Sarah Sanders to leave, right? The whole controversy that surrounded that. She's got an article out, Value Divisions. This is a new one I haven't heard. Now play out in U.S. restaurants. This justifying of the actions against individuals and public establishments when you come across them. We saw Maxine Waters, you know, talking about don't rest to get in their faces. We had Tommy Lahren in town, had water thrown on her in a visit last summer here, and it was justified, you know, by the idiots over at the City Pages. I mean, this is just a further extension of that. It'll be interesting to see if the legal aspect of it comes into play with Facebook's attempt to kind of mirror what we're already seeing being accepted, unfortunately, within the public arena.
Well, yeah. Once you've decided your opponent is evil or a Nazi, like we just said, you can do whatever you want. You can kick that person out of your restaurant. You have major corporations now like Chase Bank shutting down people they don't like on the right, shutting down anyone with views they don't like. You have a presidential candidate, the leading presidential candidate on the Democrat side, talking about going after gun manufacturers legally. Once you've decided who you don't like is evil, you can do whatever you want to them. Cut off their money, cut off their food, cut off their heads.
Jesse Kelly, when can people check out your show, and where can they check out your show, buddy?
On iHeart, nationally, every single night, 6 to 8 p.m., Monday through Friday. We've got a fresh show tonight and one you're going to want to tune into.
Thank you so much for taking time out, man. It's always great to talk to you, buddy.
Be good, brother.
I want to end on this real quick, and this is to what David was talking about on yesterday's show. This idea of Facebook in other countries, right? Online incitement rises massively against Ethiopian Israelis. A massive spike has been witnessed in recent days in online incitement and hatred towards the Ethiopian Israeli community in the wake of the death of an individual, Solomon Tika, and subsequent protests against police. This is in many posts on Facebook, YouTube, and talkbacks and news sites and other forums. Users called Ethiopian Israelis a variety of racial and ethnic slurs and called for violence against them. This is where this comes into play. It's not just us here in the United States. It's not just the individuals that we mentioned from the stories that we read. The global situation when it comes to Facebook and the incitement of violence, it's even more dangerous in other countries against other groups and organizations. And certainly a conversation we're going to continue to talk about here on Justice and Drew. Thanks for hanging out today. Great job today, Sam, by the way.
Thank you.
Drew will be back in studio tomorrow. And on tomorrow's show, we'll talk a bit about why boycotts are fruitless. Counterpoint to the St. Paul trash situation. And Fox News' Katie Pavlich will join us right around this time on tomorrow's show. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday, everybody. Bye.
Open up the door. I'll tell myself, do you hear me? I don't want nobody to give me nothing. Open up the door. I'll tell myself.
Okay, let's do it.
Give me integration. Give me true communication.